Welcome to Building Great Leaders with Dr. Les Olala.
What is encumbering you in your goals for your Christian life? Have you realized who owned you?
On today's program, Dr. Olala focuses our attention on what the scripture says about winning the race. This message was recorded at a chapel service in 2001. Building Great Leaders provides instruction, encouragement, and resources for Christian leaders. You can learn more at bgleaders.org, bgleaders.org. Our speaker, Dr. Les Olala, is the founder and director of Building Great Leaders and has been serving the Lord in full-time ministry for 50 years as a pastor, Bible college president, and evangelist. And now, winning the race.
Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 12. The writer of Hebrews talks about seven things that are true for those who win in the race of life. And I just want to talk quickly on seven things that the Hebrew writer discussed in Hebrews chapter 12, and then quickly make the parallels to winning, not only in life, but I think we can look at the microcosm of sports. How do we win? Hebrews 12, 1, wherefore seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. Note first of all the event he highlights here. It is the race. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us. The root idea of this is agony. There's an agonizing that is involved in this event. And I really believe that there has to be a mentality for those who enter the race of life as a Christian that we have to see we are in war, we are in a battle. This is not just some type of recreation, but we are in a war for the very souls of men. The event that Paul, or the writer of the Hebrews, was, some of you think it's Paul, was highlighting here, was the fact that they are in this race, which I think Paul had seen a lot of the Olympic activity, or was very well aware, and used the pattern of sports to bring this to the Christian life. Talked about a demanding, grueling, agonizing process. Those of you who are serious athletes, not just athletic, there's a difference between athletic and being an athlete. Someone may be very gifted athletically, but yet may not be a very good athlete. And the difference is the perception of the event. To see it purely as recreational, or whether it is something that is going to demand a great deal of death to myself and being alive unto God. I remember when I played high school football, I used to so dread getting the August practices that I would be positive that I would be ready. So I would run in the summer times when I had free time between when there would be some activity, and I had these large, thick mountain boots that my brother had sent me from overseas, and they were like big mountain climbing boots, but at that time they had big like truck lug tires, heavy boots, and I would run 5 miles down a beach, and then I would run up these sand dunes, and my legs would just cry. It felt like there were knives sticking in my muscular legs, and then I would rest momentarily, then I would go back at it to go up those sand dunes, and then I would go back down again, go back up the dunes, and then run the 5 miles along the beach back to where I would be. And then I would still end up throwing up for the first week of practices. I didn't have the wind sprints down quite enough, and the goal of the coach, he didn't care if we won or lost, he just wanted to make sure we threw up during the fall practices. And boy, like those guys on the ship, throwing up, seasick. Guy said, "You have a weak stomach?" He said, "No, I'm throwing it further than you are." So that was the sign of our weakness. But there was the event that was involved. And then secondly, note the endurance that is in this. This is the Greek word is talking about a steady endurance. It's a steady determination that keeps a person going. So you not only enter into the event, you get down to the point where you pay the price when the novelty wears off. You get involved. The excitement of getting the uniform, the excitement of getting your sweatshirts, or the excitement of this. Then you get down to the fact there is a long season ahead, and that means some hard practices. It means some hard things that are going to have to be involved in that. Some are great starters, but poor finishers or never finish. And when the novelty wears off, that's when you have to get to the point when it comes down to championship time, those who win will be the ones who went ahead and paid the extra price to exercise the self-control to get the exhortation of Paul to keep under the body and beat it into subjection. A while back, I hadn't seen him for a long, long time. He's been on the field. And I saw him in the gym at one of our basketball games. He came running over, and we gave each other a big hug. Well, the guy had come out of a hard background, and he had a passion for souls. Now, if you were to see this guy, you would not really give him a lot of hope for becoming one of the Time Magazine's Men of the Year. But you know what? He's been on that field now for a number of years. Churches are planted. Training bases are being set up. You know what he did? He endured the classes. He endured the process. He endured those early morning prayer times. That's a winner. That's a winner. The reason I like sports, it is such a microcosm. Same thing with music. It's such a microcosm. It's behind-the-scenes things that will make the public performance worthwhile. Thirdly, we see the writer of the Hebrews is given the encouragement. Wherefore, seeing we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses. Here we see those who made it. In Hebrews chapter 11, those who have made it should be an encouragement. Their example and their pattern. They went by faith. Study philosophy, and there was the idea of what can we believe? Everything had to be observable data. And there would be horse. That was the first level. That which I can see. Horseness was the second level. I could not see the horse, but I could see the horse's shadow. Therefore, I knew the horse was there. The third level in this philosophical triangle was the level of faith. That's where Paul lived, and that's where Paul preached. And when he was talking to them at Mars Hill, he left horseness, and he talked about the level of faith, the miraculous of Christ putting off the flesh in crucifixion, taking on the flesh again in resurrection, which was a no-no to the Roman mind. Once you were freed from this curse of this body, why would you ever want to have that soul reoccupying the body? Why would a resurrection? Number one, it's impossible. Number two, why would anyone ever want to do it? It's when Paul hit the realm of faith that the dust flew and the clothes were torn. Then we see here in Hebrews chapter 11, the pattern of those who by faith. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. They know how to run the race. They ran their race. And yet, they, without us, should not be made perfect, according to Hebrews 11 and verse 40. They're not going to be made perfect without us. And we are to follow their example. The encouragement. I like this article that Pat Riley wrote, What Winners Know. What does it take? And I think we look back at the pattern in sports of the pattern that winners follow, the pattern that winners have as their mentality. He said, number one, be a team player. We've seen the pattern of those who have gone on before us in Hebrews 11. We are to join that group with the encouragement that they have given to us. And Pat Riley says, be a team player. He said, the rhythms of teamwork have been the rhythms of my life. I played basketball alongside Hall of Famers, and the team I now coach, the New York Knicks, has rebounded from years of adversity to become a major contender in the 90s. Then he goes on to say how crucial it is to bring in the concept of teamwork. Secondly, he said, be willing to welcome change as a player. Your coach does know something. Finlandia University was just here. I talked to Van Dam, the coach of Finlandia University, and I said, I see you have another boy from Helsinki. He said, yeah, we graduated the 7-footer. This guy was 6'6", built like a Sherman tank, played like one too, by the way. He said, you know, the 7-footer we had who graduated was not a great athlete, but he was a great person. He said, the boy I have now is a super athlete. He said, well, he's going to turn my hair gray because he knows everything. And he's unteachable. And he said, it's going to be a head-to-head confrontation. Why? Because the coach may know something that needs to change. And those who welcome change will progress. And then thirdly, Riley says, beware of complacency. He said, there is a temptation to slack off when you feel good about what you've achieved, to let go of yesterday's hunger and insecurity, and to accept the illusion that your struggle has ended. You know what? The more you go on in life, the more you realize your struggles are not ending. Your struggles are just beginning. You come to a time in life, you realize you want to take on, not in complacency, but you want to broaden the horizons that you want to do in life. And don't be satisfied that you just have one shot. Don't be satisfied that you can jam the ball. Don't be satisfied that you can make layups from various ways. A basic layup is better than spinning the ball behind your back, coming over your head, doing this, and spin off the glass. And just a basic layup. You'll make more of them. Basic type things. But you can get complacent to say, hey, we have a pretty good team. No, there should not be one single person who is complacent on a team. Professional athletes know the danger of complacency, both in profession and personal life. Some reach their middle years, and when the adulation stops, they settle into marginal careers. Some even hit bottom. I heard of one yesterday arrested for cocaine possession. Those who survive are the ones who prepare for their post-glory days. Dave Bing, who played for the Detroit Pistons in the mid-60s, is an example. He was the league's leading scorer by his second year and is now considered one of basketball's all-time greats. Thinking ahead was part of Bing's makeup. Before he played pro ball, he went to Syracuse University. Since he came from a poor background, his advisors figured him for a classroom dud and suggested he skip the serious courses. These are those who major in general studies generally. What's his general studies? That is whatever I show up for. But he didn't buy that mentality. Bing didn't buy into their thinking. He even continued his education into his pro years, reading voraciously on road trips, hustling off season jobs at a bank, at Chrysler, and at a steel company, educating himself in the skills of business. Today, he is one of the most successful businessmen in the country. Bing is CEO of 3 multi-million dollar corporations and has over 300 people on his payroll. Anytime you stop striving to get better, you're bound to get worse. As my friend Lou points out, if you go to a basketball game and sit in the stands hoping a ball is going to be hit to you, or go to a baseball game, sit in the stands hoping a ball is going to be hit to you, you'll have to wait a very long time. You've got to get out on the field. And then lastly, Riley says, attitude is the mother of luck. Every life has setbacks. Facing those setbacks is what keeps you alive. And there's a mentality. When you get up to make a shot, you're thinking, this ball is going in, not this ball is going to miss. You have to have such an attitude when you get out on that floor that you know that the shots you take are going to go in. But if you go out there with a question and with a doubt, that is going to be the pattern. No, you go into life. Life is set by attitudes. Attitude, the mother of luck. And you presuppose you're going to miss, and you presuppose that you are not going to go anywhere. And then Riley says, I'm convinced that all great breakthroughs in life happen because they deny the crippling fear of failure. But what a crippler that is in sports. Fearing failure is a crippling thing. I remember Alvin Dark, who's a dear friend, had 5 World Series rings. He said, you know what? He said, we used to read the paper and we'd find the patterns. Who is pitching the next day? And he said, if so-and-so was pitching, we wouldn't sleep the night before because it got into our heads. And he said, we were beat before we got to the plate until we change our mentality. It doesn't matter who's pitching tomorrow. I'm going to sleep and I'm going to hit. But those who are crippled because of fears, then that inner voice of fear determines their direction. So listen to the inner voice that counsels courage, that affirms your life and your ability, and you will tap the power that makes a winner. Paul says, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, of love, of understanding, and of a sound mind. You don't approach athletics in fear, and you don't approach life in fear. That's what the terrorists are trying to do, terrorize us into fear so that we stop functioning. You have to go on with the absolute confidence that God is in control. The encouragement to keep going. And then he talks about the encumbrances. Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth easily beset us. The encumbrances, the weights. It's bulk. That word means a bulk. It's a mass of something. It holds you back. And the sin. Now, the weight may be something that you're tolerating. You say, well, it's not right or wrong. You can't show me a chapter and a verse. But yet it's dragging you down. It's holding you back in your Christian life. What is encumbering you in your goals for your Christian life? Have you realized who owns you? Have you come to the point where you say, God owns me. I don't own myself to make the decisions that I want to make. And I'm not going to be encumbered by my own plans and by my own designs. I'm not going to be encumbered by the things that I'm tolerating in my life that are bringing dishonor to God. Believe it or not, I probably better not even say this because you're going to discredit everything else I'm going to say and everything I've said to this point, but I used to pole vault. He said, no, he's out and out lying. One preacher said, I'm not preaching now, I'm telling you the truth. You know, we had warm-up sweats, and we didn't have the flexible poles back then. We had those big, thick aluminum poles. Some of your great-grandfathers probably used to pole vault with those same poles. And we used to run, and we'd go in sweats. Up in Calumet High School, we had snow on the ground till into early, sometimes mid-May. So we had to work out indoors. In the gymnasium, our pole vaulting box was locked into the floor like the volleyball standards. We locked them in, and it was that high above the floor. So we'd run down through the hallway into the gymnasium and then vault. That's how we practiced. We had flattenable shot puts. Shot puts that you would throw, and they would land on a gym floor, and they'd flatten, and then they would go back to... that's how we... It worked because our high school was never beaten in a dual meet in 25 years. In a dual meet, we lost some of the UP finals, but we never lost a dual meet for 25 years under that coach because he'd always planned these things. Well, then we would go to Northern Michigan University indoor track. Off the sweats would come, would be down to the lightest material we could have, and the box was not elevated. The box was down in, and your pole would slide down in, and it was unbelievable thrust that you could get with the clothes shed, and now you felt like a feather. Even one time in my life, I did. I felt like a feather. My pants were filled with helium. Now, there would be nothing unbiblical about me vaulting in a UP final meet, pole vaulting. There'd be nothing unbiblical with heavy clothes on. My Uper wingtips, I call them my hunting boots, my Uper wingtips. Blaze orange, which is standard ultra dressed up attire. And I'd get way over the bar, but the problem is my blaze orange coat, my hunting coat, caught the bar and pulled it off. And someone said, well, Les, why don't you take some of those clothes off? I'd say, mind your own business. This is how I would choose to do. Well, say, then don't get any medals. Nobody could take in a Bible and showed me chapter and verse why I couldn't have those Uper wingtips on in all these books. But the common sense is take off the things that encumber. Now, in your life, what do you know is keeping you back from ultimate victory in your personal life, in your personal walk with God? Something you're tolerating, hanging on to, you say, well, I can't say it's right or wrong, but it definitely is keeping me from conformity to Christ. Rid yourself of those encumbrances. Then the writer talks about the example, fixing our eyes on Jesus, looking unto Jesus. The implication are away from everything else, singly, single focused on Him. The example of Jesus Christ. Why? He is the author of our faith, and He is the perfecter of our faith. He is the one who set the pattern for us. Where you look is very important. We're paying too much attention to ourselves, and we're paying too much attention to others, and not enough focus on the one who is our life and the one who is our pattern. The one who cried, "It is finished." The one who said, "Into thy hands I commend my spirit." The one who cried, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." The one who paid the ultimate price. So as a Christian, we cannot pay so much attention to the mechanics of our Christian life that we forget the gaze on our example. As an athlete, you cannot be so wrapped up in the mechanics of your sport that you never put the ball in the hoop. Example. And then what is the end? The joy that was set before Him. Who for the joy that was set before Him? His bride. Paul told the Thessalonians, "You are my joy. You are my crown of rejoicing." The joy set before Him, the anticipation of the bride that was coming. What is your end at this tournament? Your end is the expectation of reward. The end is a banner. The end is a trophy. The end is that next phase in your life, in your athletic high school career. What's the exhortation? Consider Him that endured such contradiction of sinners. As you live your life, consider Christ Jesus. I am crucified with Christ, Paul says. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ that liveth in me. In the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave Himself for me. How do you win championships? You don't win championships. You win plays. Championships happen as a result of you winning plays. You win every possession. Championships happen. I can't understand a loose ball in a basketball game and only one guy on the floor going after it. I cannot understand the mentality that would have let someone else do it when you say, I'm going to give every ounce that I have and I'm going to win every possession. I'm going to win every play that I can possibly win. And you know what? Then a championship happens because you've won plays. The exhortation to consider Him who did win. And I'll close with Lombardi. Lombardi had a winning mentality. I don't agree with all of the premise upon which he built, but Lombardi said, winning isn't everything. Winning is the only thing. Now, it's a strange thing. A little dinky city like Green Bay, Wisconsin, could have one of the most famous football teams and one of the most famous football programs in the history. The only team that city owned. But it goes back to a man named Coach Lombardi. Coach Lombardi, according to Jerry Kramer, who played right guard on the championship team, He wrote in his book, Instant Replay, Coach Lombardi flatly declared that he would not be a part of a second-place team. He said, I will sell players, I will trade players, I might even shoot players, but I won't be a second-place coach. And I think some of them believed he might shoot him. I've been in second place, he hollered at his cringing player. Second place is hinky-dinky team playing in a hinky-dinky town in front of hinky-dinky fans. That's all second place, hinky-dinky, and I'm never going to do it again. So you want to be hinky-dinky? We're going to have a bunch of hinky-dinky teams here because there's only one going home with the trophies. The rest of you hinky-dinky, according to Lombardi. So say, I don't agree with everything, he says. Lombardi wanted his players to dispense with everything that did not contribute to victory. In challenging the team, he said, you guys are into too many of your own things. He would scream at them during practice. You want to go off hunting on your day off? You want to play cards? You own too many restaurants and scuba diving stores. You're making commercials and selling franchises. What we want here in Green Bay is to play football and win. And you know what? He hammered and hammered and hammered and hammered and hammered. Well, let's transfer that mentality to the Christian life. Maybe the Holy Spirit is saying, you're into too many of your own things. What we need to do as Christians is line up with those in Hebrews 11 and win. And be a winner. Winners in sports win every play because every play is crucial. Winners in life win every choice. Because your future is made up of choices. And winning or losing is a series of choices that you have in your life. And I hope that if you go home from here winning a tournament, you will also go home from here with a winning mentality for life, realizing God owns me. And I hope that you will determine you're not going to look long range as a winner, but you are going to win every choice and say God is going to have his way in every choice of my life.
Thank you for joining us for Building Great Leaders today. Dr. Les Olala speaking on winning the race. This program is a ministry of Building Great Leaders, providing instruction, encouragement, and resources for Christian leaders, and is produced by Harvest Ministries on Guam. You can learn more at bgleaders.org, bgleaders.org. Join us again for more teaching from the Word of God next time on Building Great Leaders.